I'm opening the floor to the introductions from the health department.
Honorable Chair and honorable members, good morning. I'm Dr. Yogan Pillay, a DDG from the Department of Health. I know the letter from the DG to the honorable chairperson suggests that because the minister and the DG are dealing with the marijuana issue, I'm here with the delegation and I'll ask them to introduce themselves.
Good morning. I'm Ed Melvin Freeman. I'm the Chief Director for Non-Communicable Diseases.
Good morning. I am Dr. Nansha Shazamini. I'm the Chief Director for Child, Youth and School Health.
Good morning. I'm Sandra Singh. I'm Director of Chronic Disease, Disability and Geriatrics.
I'm Dr. Howley, Director of Women's Health and Genetics, and I attended both the days of the public hearing.
I know
that you're coming. Oh, thank you. Yes, you can see that this department is prepared. It has been prepared as well. And I'm happy to hear that there are sections of women, children. You said you are from Children, yes?
I'm
Children
and School Health.
Oh, that's very good. Okay, members, I will hand over to you for the introduction. Can we start with you, Honorable Liu?
Good afternoon or morning, whatever it is. Everybody, my name is Committee Nemo, member of the Portfolio Committee for Women, Children and Disabilities. Thank you.
Good morning, I'm Sarah Falk, I'm a member of the committee. Thank you.
I can see.
Oh, it's your rally voice. I want to use your rally voice.
I am Hilda Mswelling, member of the health committee.
Morning, everybody. I'm Alan Mula, member of the committee. Thank you.
Good morning, I'm Denise Robinson, member of the Health Committee.
Good morning, I'm Manana Take, the member of the committee, the whip of the committee, and I'm sitting in for the chairperson of the committee. She has just been called by the deputy speaker. We have a meeting, an emergency meeting. And here I have a No, she will introduce herself. We have a moment.
Yeah. Morning, my name is Nelson Obakana. I'm the committee secretary. Thank you.
Thank you, members. I will hand over to the department to give us a presentation. Oh, Danny, why did you keep quiet? Okay, Danny, sorry.
And I'm the only male member of the
Sorry, Danny, for forgetting you. Okay, over to the department.
I think it's really nice.
Honorable Chair, honorable members, again, good morning. And just to say that on behalf of the Minister and the DG, thank you very much for inviting us back to the committee. Two of the members of the department were at the hearing. Dr. Nonshata Glavini reminded me that she was also present during the hearing. The presentation that we have, and you have copies of it, responds directly to the letter that the Honourable Chairperson sent to the Minister, and arises out of the hearings that were held. And there were four specific issues that that were raised in the letter, which the presentation tries to respond to. So the presentation will go through that. And it's, of course, all related to giving effect to the UN Convention on the Rights of Persons with Disabilities. So the outline of the presentation then will focus on the status of rehabilitation personnel, including retention and recruitment, the creation of improving access to rehabilitation services at all levels, but in particular primary health care, extending rehabilitation beyond health. We recognize, as the committee, that rehabilitation is more than just about health services. And finally, around the key issue of providing assistive devices to these persons with disabilities. And we'll start with the status of how many people are registered in the various categories with their health number of physiotherapists, which is 6,162. What we should note is that this register that the HPCSA has given us contains all practitioners that are registered with them.
Sorry, Jeffrey, can you just not use the acronym? Can you say it all?
Oh, right. So it's the Health Professions Council of South Africa, which registers all health practitioners in the country. So the Health Professions Council of South Africa contains all people who are registered, including those that work in the public sector. And it also contains people who are retired and who are not practicing any longer. On average, only about a quarter of those registered with the Health Professions Council are in the public sector. And the next slide shows by category how many are in the public sector. So if you take psychologists, for example, you will see that the provinces also have highly variable numbers of psychologists employed, and most of them, chairpersons, are employed to work in hospitals. The province that has made the greatest efforts to move psychologists into communities and districts is Gauteng, as is indicated in this slide. So for the Honorable Denny, Gauteng has a total of 93 psychologists, 48 working in hospitals and 45 in communities. Limpopo has 50 psychologists, all of whom work in hospitals. So you can see that there is quite a wide variation across the various provinces. The other rehabilitation workers, occupational therapists, physiotherapists, various people who deal with orthotics and prosthetics, and the speech therapists, again you can see the numbers are quite highly variable by province, with Gauteng again having the most number, followed by KwaZulu-Natal. Limpopo also has done fairly well. You can see that Limpopo has 138 occupational therapists in the public sector and 155 physiotherapists. This slide basically tries to show that I think even the so-called rural provinces are making an effort to get more of the therapists employed in the public sector, even though it's not always easy to do. But you can see that some provinces are still struggling. If you look at the Northwest, for example, they only have 34 occupational therapists and 44 physiotherapists and 10 speech therapists in the public sector. So the picture is highly variable and still not entirely satisfactory, but some improvement, especially in provinces like Limpopo. However, if you divide the number of health professionals per 100,000 population, and we did this just for two provinces to show the variation, the province with the most number of therapists in the public sector is Gauteng, and one that is really struggling is the Northwest. So if you take OTs, occupational therapists, in Gauteng, they have two. Sorry, the first row should read Gauteng and the second row Northwest. So if you look at the first row, there are two occupational therapists for every 100,000 people in Gauteng, whereas there's less than one occupational therapist in the public sector per 100,000 people in Northwest. The same is true of physiotherapists and speech and hearing therapists as well. But as we said before, most tertiary, regional, and specialized hospitals have these categories. The big challenge, of course, is at district level and availability at primary health care. So while we say that Gauteng has a fair number of rehabilitation specialists, even there are a number of vacancies. If you look at occupational therapists in Gauteng, they have 191 posts, of which 175 are filled, giving you a vacancy of 16. With respect to physiotherapists, they've got 250 posts, they've got 239 filled and 13 vacant. Audiologists, they've got 10 posts, 10 are filled. And speech therapists, they've got 43 posts, and they filled all 43. Now the key question is, are the number of posts that they have what they need? That's the key question that we need to answer. Now, one of the challenges is that we have not got normative standards yet for the rehabilitation work. With respect to retention and expansion of training, as a retention strategy, therapists do receive occupation specific dispensation. And I suspect that some of the additional categories that we were able to employ over time, including in places like the Corporal, is because we have been able to pay them a bit more. The department is, however, undertaking an assessment of the occupation specific dispensation, not just for occupational therapists or therapists, but for all categories. Because it has, on the nursing side, created a number of challenges that we didn't anticipate. And I'm sure members of the health committee in particular, this has been raised a few times in the health committee, and by members of the health committee. As committee members know, there is a human resources for health plan for South Africa that the minister launched in 2010. And this plan does make provision for expanded opportunities for a number of categories, including therapists. So what are we doing? We are training additional medical orthotists and prosthetists in Walter Sisulu University. There are new training programs for speech therapy and audiology at Fort Hare and Walter Sisulu that's being considered currently. And that we are training orientation and mobility instructors. And we are following up the impact of this category as well. And the members of the team in the department will speak more about these things during, if there are questions that arise from members of the committee. Now, honourable members, you know, the minister has spoken, said at various places about the National Health Insurance. Now, this is one example of how we think the implementation of the National Health Insurance System might increase access to all of the, in this instance, rehab therapists in the country. So if you take all the rehab therapists that are registered, and if you take all the occupational therapists that are registered, and you divide them by the population, we will have one occupational therapist for every 14,500 people in the country. However, at the moment, if you look at the occupational therapists that are just working in the private sector, there's one occupational therapist to 2,800 people in the private sector, that use the private sector, and one occupational therapist for 53,000 people in the public sector. So you can see that if we more equitably distribute occupational therapists so that every South African has equal access to them depending on need, then we'll have better chance of people who need to see an occupational therapist. The same applies to physiotherapists, that if you take all the physiotherapists that are registered in the country, there's one per 9,000 population, there's one per 1,600 population in the private sector, but one to 50,000 population in the public sector. So what's clear is that there's a maldistribution of therapists in the country, even though there might be a shortage in real terms as well, but if we distribute them more evenly, people will have more equitable access. The creation of additional posts to meet the priority service needs is the next slide. The honourable members will know that the minister asked the department to do three things specifically to improve primary health care in the country, and we call that re-engineering of the primary health care system. And the re-engineering will also include improvement in access to rehabilitation services. So through the re-engineering, screening for visual and hearing impairments and development will improve because it's part of the school health policy and the protocols that we've developed together with the Department of Basic Education. And Dr. Flamini here has been leading the process from the Department of Health side, and we can say more about what exactly we'll be doing and when we will be relaunching. Well, when the Minister of Health will be relaunching together with the Minister of Basic Education the new revised school health policy and program. Secondly, we have, through the ward-based primary health care system, we have expanded the role of community health workers who are part of these ward-based teams. And as part of the new curriculum that we are finalizing for these ward-based teams, rehabilitation and competencies are included. And re-engineering primary healthcare, we are revisiting the primary healthcare package and the minimum standards required to implement the package. And one of the components of that package is rehabilitation services. And we will be revisiting the human resource norms for rehabilitation workers at primary healthcare level as part of this process.
Clearly,
rehabilitation work needs to be integrated with all other work we do in the department, and because it's not a vertical program. And it's necessary so that we can both, on the planning side and on the implementation side, ensure that we provide comprehensive care. So two examples are provided in the next slide on the example of comprehensive care. Previously, the issue of loss of hearing, especially with multiple drug-resistant patients, TB patients, was raised by the committee. And the issue of provision of audiology services and evaluation was raised. We are in the process of rolling out to every one of our 38 sites at which we are seeing multiple drug-resistant patients, audiology services, together with assistance from the Centers for Disease Control, which is providing us with some additional funding. The Road to Health chart, which we implemented about 2 years ago now, the new Road to Health chart. The Road to Health chart is sort of the chart that boys and girls carry along, which shows immunization status and everything else about children. We think it's an effective tool for the early identification of impairment and disability. And we are strengthening the use of the Road to Health chart by especially primary health care workers. There's a big push to integrate rehabilitation services with non-communicable diseases, which is the structure that Professor Freeman leads, and where all of the chronic diseases are programmed and monitored. Rehabilitation is part of comprehensive service delivery to patients, especially with secondary complications of non-communicable diseases, including strokes. And as I think honourable members may know, we had a fairly big meeting in September last year, not 2012, September last year, I mean September this year, because we're not there yet, where we spoke about the importance of non-communicable diseases, and we did this ahead of an international meeting held in the United Nations in New York. At which summit we came up with some fairly specific targets on non-communicable, which if the committee would like more information, Professor Freeman can provide. The other big issue, Honourable Chairperson, is HIV and AIDS, which has had a lot of attention in the past. Now, the good news on HIV and AIDS is that as we are rolling out our antiretroviral program, the treatment for HIV patients, people are living longer. We have now some evidence from Northern KwaZulu-Natal that people are living about 6 years longer. So the life expectancy of people living with HIV on antiretrovirals has increased by about 6 years. So, and that's between 2004 and 2011, where they tracked a cohort of patients on antiretrovirals. Of course, as patients live longer, they're going to have all the chronic diseases. So they will need all the rehabilitation services that go with it. So we are very mindful of the fact that we need also, even in the context of an HIV epidemic, to improve our services on chronic diseases and for people who need rehabilitation services. And we need then to have an integrated package of services for even people with communicable diseases, like HIV. In terms of improving access, I think honorable members will know from the minister's input at various meetings that we are in the process of completing, in fact we've completed an audit of all 4,200 health facilities, public health facilities in the country. And one of the issues we cover in the audit is infrastructure. This adds to the report that we prepared in 2010 that shows access to people with physical disabilities to our health facilities. Which showed that at the time, district hospitals were the least accessible. And we've had a program with our infrastructure units in the department to ensure that physical infrastructure is improved in all of our health facilities. As honorable members know, we have, the minister has designated 10 sites which are National Health Insurance pilot sites. again, one of the issues in these sites is to prioritize improved access to people with disabilities at our health facilities. Our health facilities planning unit in the department is in the process of finalizing norms and standards for rehabilitation, which also includes access to people with disabilities, so that every new facility then adheres to the new norms and standards. And clearly we would need to improve the quality of service, and led by the non-communicable diseases cluster, there is a survey that will be prepared to look at the quality of services we provide on non-communicable diseases. So as we said initially, Honourable Chairperson and members, we acknowledge that, you know, the rehabilitation issue extends beyond the health domain, and therefore we need to adopt an intersectoral approach to our chronic management of rehabilitation. And we give here some examples of government departments we collaborate with and we work on, and I think the DG of Justice mentioned also the number of committees, intersectoral committees that Justice needs, that the Department of Health also participates. And here in this slide, we suggest, for example, that with the Department of Social Development, we collaborate with them on a number of issues, including issues around social security, all the grants, assessment instruments for grants. We look and work with them on what services should be provided jointly for people with persons with disabilities, particularly children with disabilities. With the Department of Basic Education, we have, as I said, looked at how we can work together in ensuring that children with disabilities are taken care of through the school health program and the provision of assistive devices. With National Treasury, they hold the purse strings. So we work with them, for example, on getting additional funding to fund assistive devices like wheelchairs and hearing aids. With the Department of Higher Education, we focus on training of health professionals, training of mid-level workers. With the Stats of Africa, we work with them before the census protocols were finalized to look at what information we should collect in the census on persons with disabilities. We don't know what the results are yet, Chair. I'm told that on the 14th of October, they will release the results of the census. So we'll have a better sense also of what the demography and epidemiology is of persons living with persons with disabilities once we get the census data. And that would help us also plan more carefully and plan better, both at the national and sub-national level, especially at the provincial level, where possible at the district level. With respect to the South African Bureau of Standards, they help us with getting standards for wheelchairs and fastening devices, access to buildings, access to standards for accessible transport, etc. Honourable Chair, Honourable Members, we also work with a number of NGOs, civil society organisations and professional associations, and we give some examples here. The South African Disability Alliance, we work with them on access to health services, assistive device provision and orientation and mobility services. We work with the Bureau for the Blind, South African Society of Physiotherapists, Occupational Therapy Association of South Africa, South African Speech, Hearing and Language Association. So we work with a number of organizations, both professional organizations and civil society organizations. We wish we had more money to allocate to these organizations, because we fully accept that civil society organizations in particular can extend the work to the department. But the amount of money we have is limited, and we can go into some of the details. The last couple of slides, the Honourable Chairperson talked about provision of assistive devices. Basically, we provide wheelchairs, hearing aids, and artificial limbs in our health facilities. And these recipients are then trained to use and care for these devices. It is important that recipients receive the correct device. And most therapists are specializing in seeking to give optimal service based on evidence. I mean, you know, it's a question of using evidence to ensure that we provide the best service possible. there's some new technology. We're moving from analog hearing aids to digital hearing aids. I must say, unless you are recipient of hearing aids or you are in the business of buying hearing aids, you don't quite know how expensive they are. These are very expensive devices. They can be 15,000-20,000 rand each. So obviously we need to provide these devices, but they are really quite expensive. Our new wheelchair contracts now also cater for motorized wheelchairs to cater for other features. Again, we all know that these are expensive items also. One of the key challenges, of course, with wheelchairs is that there are not many wheelchairs that are useful in rural areas, where there are no smooth areas, no smooth paving. So it's quite a challenge to get a contract for wheelchairs that caters for multiple terrains. Cochlear implants for people with hearing challenges. We would like to do far more, but again, we do about 60 in a year in the public sector. Again, these are quite expensive. On wheelchairs, in 2010-11, we spent more than 50 million rands. And we recognize that they are still waiting lists. And again, the director for responsible for chronic diseases, Ms. Singh, will be able to give us some ideas. Should committee members want to know about where our waiting lists are, what makes the waiting list time. But there are challenges, even though quite a bit is being done. I'm not sure that it could ever be sufficient. One of the things that we didn't speak about, because it didn't come up specifically here, is the issue of prevention of disability. It's a big issue, and Professor Freeman here is leading an interdepartmental committee that's mandated by an interministerial committee that's looking at prevention of violence, injuries prevention and violence prevention. And again, that has given rise to quite a few disabilities too. And Dr. Ramini, unit looks at genetic disorders, and Dr. Howler is the director that's responsible for genetic disorders, which also gives rise to a number of genetically related disorders. So both from the accidental side and from the more genetic side, we've got people in the department who are looking at it. And again, the prevention side, I think there is more we can do and should do, and both of them can speak to what we are doing about it, but it's not something to do. So in conclusion, Chair, we as a department acknowledge that persons with disabilities and their families and caregivers experience a number of barriers in life generally, but specifically in access to health and rehabilitation services. We have a number of things in place that we are trying to do to address these challenges. Clearly we need to and can do more. And one of the big concerns, there are two major concerns, to be honest. One is personnel, which I think we've described quite clearly, and the second is money. Those are really the specific challenges that I think when the committee, the health committee and the committee that deals with women, children and persons with disabilities, deals with our budget, I think it's something that needed more. What are the budgets for these services? Chair, with your permission, I'll stop here. And we'll be happy to take comments.
Thank you so much, Dr. Pillay. I hope members who have been listening and you can realize that the type of work that the Department of Health is doing and the expectations, we'll find out from the expectations that we picked up during the public hearings. So before I hand over to you, members, Dr. Pillay mentioned that there was the is Dr. Me? Dr. Nontlantla, Tamini, and Dr. Kauli, who are dealing with the prevention on factors that might that affect disability. Is that so?
On the genetic side.
So I don't know whether you like to have that for him to say something or whether you like to interact with Dr. Pillay's paper first. then just for information, maybe we can let Dr. Howley and Dr. Anandar, because I'm very interested myself. I would like to hear what it is that they are doing. Because really I can see that this is a very comprehensive approach, and I'm very excited to see that really they are taking people with disability with great concern. Because it was like as we were going down doing the oversight, we find that these children, special schools for these children. But we'll always ask ourselves, to whom does these children fall? Health, education will not say, no, it's not us. Education will say, it's not us. Health will say, no. Social development will say, no. But I can see now here you are coming up with a comprehensive approach. And really, this is promising. Because at the end of the day, it will be the business of all of us. Not when we get here at the school and say, no, this is supposed to be done by health, this is supposed to be done by social development, this is done by basic education. So I can see that there's a lot of improvement on the health side. Okay, over to you, members. Yes. Honorable Lamula. Let me say, it will be Honorable Lamula, Honorable Diem, Honorable Denny, Honorable Robinson, you left us for so long. Honorable Robinson, so you'll go, and then Honorable Minty, we'll go according to the list. Okay.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Dr. Kulaye, for a very informative presentation. And I think it's really different to the seems to be very powerful to me. My first question is after the presentation on page 5. And it is, what happens to disabled persons once they are back in community? Are there any rehabilitation centers for these people? How do you monitor or do you reach the center? And I know there needs to be an integrated approach to this, because we do have line departments. Social workers need to come in to identify these people to get to the health clinic. And my second question is on the high cost of devices and cochlear implants. Is there any strategy in place to have this identified, hearing sets, sight systems, the babies are born, to at least cut down on the cost? Because I think that might be help, you know, us having disabled persons, a lifelong disability, and rather having citizens that can contribute to the economy. And then sexual abuse is very high for the disabled person. And there are few therapists, psychologists, that can be counseling, especially in our rural areas. What is your approach on that one? And my last question is, in February when you presented to the committee, and I remember so very well, the question was, what is the commitment of your department supporting the rehabilitation program and you and the right issues affecting disabled people? And your very words were, I'm sure the department will agree that the services for disabled are inadequate, failing to reach many of these in need. For instance, most public services are placed in major hospitals, and special schools have few services available at community level. Has this situation changed? I don't expect it to change 100% turnaround, but there will be some change in this in this situation. Thank you.
Thank you, and thanks for the presentation, Dr. Kulaye. My question is, I would like to know, how does the department ensure that persons with disability are not discriminated against within public health facilities with care personnel? And second one, what complaint mechanism are in place in the event that a person with a disability that is discriminated against and can seek recourse? And the last one, Chapter 2. Is there earmarked funding for undertaking disability awareness program? What are the associated costs in this regard? Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Kim. Honorable Ding.
Chair, the health presentation that other members have mentioned is very good, and we are actually honored because it looks like this is an exceptional department and it's going to attract it. And you notice that during the hearing, the DG was also here and he said through, and that was quite interesting because I, for the first time, thought, well, people are really concerned about that. So the first question on the preventative, I don't know how big the campaign is because I think that the whole world is taking the approach in medicine of preventative medicine rather than curative, you know, where you wait until people are sick and start spending money. Maybe for doctors that's good because maybe if they are not diseases, there won't be vacancies. But I know that the world is really serious about taking preventative approach to medicine rather than curative. How big is our campaign in this country? Because I was surprised when I went to my doctor and he was telling me, check your high blood sugar, cholesterol, what is the other one that is big? He couldn't speak and he was in a coma. Now he's regained speech.
But I'm surprised because they said, look, the only thing that remains behind is his memory. And they can only cure them through therapy, taking to psychologists and giving him exercises. So I thought, oh, can this therapy is so important that it can heal? That's like you are helpless and the medicine is going to just by doing exercises and talking to psychologists, you ultimately can recover your memory to the fullest. Things that you take for granted. So I'm just saying, when you send therapies outside, distribute them into the communities, like than just keeping them at first. This could be actually as part of the solution to disability. And I just want to hear more about that. What programs are there in the rural area to make sure we distribute? Probably because rural don't have clinics as much as we have, like in the other day. Maybe we can just add some more information, because from my family, I realized, well, this thing of therapy is so important, it can actually even cure disability. Thank you.
Thank you, Jenny. Yes, you are well informed, man. You know the healthy lifestyle thing. Okay, just sing it, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, what's your head up?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. You come after. Okay.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you too for a good presentation. And it's wonderful to see how efficient the department is.
Mm-hmm.
And after years of problems, I think the things have been turned around, so we are really very happy about that. Shows what good leadership can do. One of the problems we still have is insufficient staff, doctors, nurses, professionals. You've mentioned this already. I just want to know, yes, while we're trying to recruit more people and while we're trying to increase the number of teaching hospitals, what is actually being done to improve the working conditions? But this is one of the reasons that there is such an exodus. And having recently been on a tour from KZN through to the Eastern Cape, to see some of the conditions of those hospitals, lack of electricity, lack of water, great big gaping cracks in the walls of hospitals, no wonder people don't want to stay. So what are we doing to try and retain our staff that have been trained here and that can contribute so much? I also just want to say that the integrated approach to education, for example, for people with disabilities is really working so well. I think one has to distinguish that there are some, perhaps people who are severely autistic, who would have to go to a special type of school. But I attended the International Symposium on Down Syndrome this last week. And especially the closing ceremonies, I can't tell you how impressed I was to see the level of education and sophistication of people who were generally in the past regarded as very much left behind. And there were some cases of people who had degrees and all sorts of things, but socially so wonderfully competent. I just want to applaud that and say if we can bring more of that in, and as other countries, the international countries, have done more so, that would be really great. So, yes, I'd like to know what more is being done in that regard. I think I'll leave it at that. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Robinson. Honorable Munti, you were to come before Honorable Munti. So can I give over to Honorable Munti? And then you will come after. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I think Honourable Member Kekana, you forgot about the opening of nurses' home. But the nurses' home, if you can give back, you know, because we need health workers. My question, I just want to know from the department, what is the department policy in so far? The promotion of sign language in public health, because really, if you go to our community clinic, you know, find somebody who can't speak, doing a sign language, he can't get any assistance from our health workers. Is there really a problem? You know, one lady, my neighbor, to go to give birth at Baragwanath Hospital because she was doing a pregnancy. The boyfriend was there, and they asked the name and the surname of the baby because there's nobody can interpret the sign language. The boyfriend just gives the name and the surname of the boyfriend, and it was a struggle to change everything because now this poor woman, you know, she can't speak for herself. The boyfriend was speaking on her behalf. It was a really problem because in our culture we can't give the baby the surname of the boyfriend, especially at medicine. I think Dr. Gamil knows that, but it was a struggle for she was taken down, you know. It's a really problem in our health clinic and in our hospitals, especially in our community. That's why I want to know what the department is doing about that. And another question, what measures are in place to ensure that a patient with a visual impairment and blind person are able to access healthcare information and materials for specific purposes to the health promotion? Really, because they are really struggling. Especially, really, maybe in town is better, but in our rural areas, our community is a really important. Thank you. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Mutu. Over to you, Honourable Mr.
Thank you, Chair. Why is community speech and hearing workers having less number of qualified professionals on the HPCSA? Is it because of low population or so? My question is why is not a comment. Thank you very much, Department, because KZN has decreased in HIV and AIDS, as it was very high previously. So I think I hope it is going to decrease the degree up to zero. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honourable. I will give over to Honourable Robinson before the excitement answers.
Thank you. I just got one question. It has been mentioned previously that early detection of disability leads to improved care. I just want to know about the hearing tests. I know there are many hospitals that do hearing tests at birth, but could you give us an indication of at which level of hospitals they are? And you know, how many of them can actually do it, and if there are plans to expand that. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Honourable. Before I give over to the department, I would like to ask some few questions with regard to what is the status of the 2% disability equity target within the department. Can you be able to stipulate as the levels of employment and levels of sex? Then what are the current changes faced by the department in terms of mainstreaming disability into the service agenda? Because that's one of our main challenges, where you find that the departments don't want to take these people because they say they are very expensive to get them the assistance by. And then the last one is how is the disability mainstreamed in the department, let's say a 10-point plan? Does that one, is it clear?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So we'll give over to the department, and then you will share yourself. Let me do this.
Okay.
I can see you are so excited here. You're so interested. I will definitely give you the second bite. Thank you.
Chair and Honourable Members, thank you very much. I'll respond to some of them, and I'll start from my right and ask each of my colleagues to respond to the sections that they are responsible for. Some general comments. With respect to taking the services into communities. And I think that's been the key issue that many of vulnerable members have raised. And it's certainly an issue that we are grappling with in the department. And the re-engineering of primary health care is our attempt to take services outside of out facilities into communities for a few reasons. The one is because we want to focus far more on prevention. Secondly, because we know that many people have difficulties of various types coming to our facilities, so the idea is to take services to them rather than to only wait for them to come to facilities. And secondly, because we think that getting people into communities is likely to enable us to attend to problems earlier than later. So for those three specific reasons, the idea is to take services into communities. Now, the question is, how are we doing this? And what are some of the challenges? Because there are challenges too. As I said, the three streams of primary healthcare engineering are designed to do that. With respect to the ward-based teams, each electoral ward, each municipal ward, is by the policy that we've developed, supposed to have at least one outreach team, depending on the population. Of course, some wards are big, some are small. And each team should have about 6 community health workers led by a primary health care nurse. And in the areas where we've already trained them, they should have a health promoter. Where there is already a municipally employed environmental health practitioner, the health practitioner should be part of it. We are working with the Department of Social Development to figure out how auxiliary social workers will fit into the team. And there are two options that we are working with them on. One is on a referral basis, that they would refer, we refer back and forth, and the other that they would be part of the team. The second is the community caregivers. And we have many community caregivers employed by at least social development and ourselves, who do more home-based care and palliative care. And again, the idea is to link these up. So the idea, honorable members, is that we have many workers in the field, but the dots are not joined up. So the primary healthcare engineering system, together with social development, is an attempt to join up the dots and to ensure that every geographic area is provided with a comprehensive package of services. Now, we've already reorientated 5,000 community health workers over a 3-month period. And they've already been deployed in a number of districts. And we are doing now the second round of training. Over time, we will need at least 40,000 of these community health workers who will be working in these ward-based teams. As I said in the presentation, honorable members, we are revisiting the curriculum of community health workers to ensure that they do prevention, promotion, and a bit of curative care. So on the rehab side, we are also revisiting the curriculum of community health workers to try and figure out what they can do on the rehab side, and who then they will refer, and who they will refer to, and what services they will put into the community, so that they would really be the frontline health workers, rather than nurses sitting in clinics. So that's the idea. As I said, we've deployed 5,000 of them, and we are working with the University of Washington right now to work out